You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet, Miss Ellen.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can hit the Listen Live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, there you can also go to On Demand. We are here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And then, of course, we share all of that, the downloads of the shows, as well as pictures and bios of all of our guests on social media, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
Well, I tell you know what? It feels so good that we've been on air for over 15 and a half years. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, our show is a fun, unscripted, educational, and quite informative show. We've got guests that come into the studio to speak about financial literacy. Some folks want to write a book. Some folks already wrote a book. We talk about voting. We speak about clean air, water, sunshine. We speak about elder abuse, the foster care system. We speak to women. We talk about, domestic violence. We've had a lot of shows about bullying. The school board has been on. We've got Tim Bovanic is coming in to speak about the voting laws and elections in a few weeks. We've got quite a few candidates who are running for office that will be coming. And we give everyone a platform to speak from their heart about something or advocacy that they're doing to make our world a better place. And like we say, we like to make sure that everyone knows that it's our inherent right to leave this planet a better place than we found it. Right. And of course, Ellen, you're doing that as well through music.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we're doing it with the show. We're doing it with, I think, just the networking and everything that you go out and do. And the people that we've met because of the show is just beyond imaginable. Like just that, producers to, really super famous people, all the way to our local people who are doing famous things right here in our community.
That's right. And so in studio today, we've got Ellen O'Neill. She's my co-host. She's been with me for 15 and a half years. We couldn't do the show without Ellen. Danny is here. And Allie Tambor is a friend of Ellen's. And now she became a friend of mine and Danny's. And she comes every Monday and just hangs out with us. Gave us something to do. I met quite a few interesting people at ABWA, where you and I met, the American Business Women's Association. And I must say, I've been blessed with a wonderful friendship with my friend, Sharon David Howe. And Sharon is here, and she is with a company called SourcePoint. And she will be speaking on the second segment. We've been talking about her friends that she met through Woman in Title. And she's been filling me in about, all the great things that title companies do and the searches they do when you purchase a home, declare the title to make sure the house is yours, free and clear. And she knows a lot about mortgages and things like that. And then she brought with her a friend, Heather Arado. Am I saying it correct? Heather is a Florida native, and she's also a seasoned mortgage and title professional with decades of experience. So these two lovely ladies, and they are beautiful. They are all sitting here. They're going to talk about their advocacy and what Woman in Title is all about. And, they also empower and support each other here in Brevard County and around the state of Florida. And now I understand all 50 states. And I have to tell you, Ellen, while preparing for the show, I couldn't be more prouder of my friend Sharon. She is the director of operations for title services at SourcePoint, which is a first source company. And she oversees so many people in India, which is one of the reasons why we're really good friends, hence being Indian and everything. And she had her MBA, as you know, I had a party for her.
Right.
So together with Heather, they're going to have a great second segment. And Heather has nice hair for our listeners who are tuning in. Her hair looks really, really spiffy. She's got like a nice streak in it. She's gorgeous as well. So our first segment, you know, I'm always looking for great guests to call in. And while scrolling, I found a gentleman here on the web, Ellen. And I told him, I said, you know, I would like for you to call in on our radio show. His name is Robin Greenfield. He's an activist, a social reformer. And I have to say, he is leaving a great name behind on planet Earth. If you see his bio, you'll be like, gosh, we need a Robin Greenfield in every town in America and every community. And I think he's on the phone. And without further ado, I'm going to have Robin introduce himself to our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, hello, Sita. It's really nice to be joining you this morning. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my goodness. I was saying to the ladies, I said, I hope he calls in because I know I verified it a few times and we confirmed. But I was like, gosh, he's huge. I've been looking at all the stuff you do. And boy, you remind me a lot of my husband because he loves plants and animals. And he's a vegetarian and he's dedicated to planet Earth. So talk to us a little bit about yourself and your connection to planet Earth.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, I do have a very simple mission, and that is that I want to live in a way that is harmonious with the Earth. And I think a lot of people listening would be like, yes, of course, I would like to live harmoniously with the Earth. But the issue is that today we live in a time where most of our societal norms and our structures and our daily actions are based around systems that cause incredible amounts of destruction. They're tied to systems of exploitation and oppression. And there's so much harm to our global humanity and the plants and animals through our consumeristic, you know, U.S. American ways. And so my objective really is to analyze every single way in which I exist, all of the relationships that I have, and do the best to bring them into alignment so that the way I'm living is actually beneficial to the people, to the planet, to the plants and animals. And that's my life mission, to be the change I wish to see in the world and to help anyone on this journey who is looking for support to do the same or do something similar.
Yeah. Well, you know, your activism, it involves dramatic gestures. And I mean, you are trying your best to reach people and provoke a thought and self-reflection and positive changes. And I think you're making a difference because you've been covered worldwide media coverage, almost like the Robin Hood of the modern times. And you are, because, you know, I see people at the end of life, because I am a long-term care nurse. I've been one going on 36 years. And at the end of life, people do become minimalists, not by choice, but they're forced to. And it's amazing how many people will survive on a twin bed with one dresser, no car keys, no credit cards, no house with a front door. And then at that time, they talk to you about, oh, I have so much stuff to give away, right? Because we spend the first 40 years of our life accumulating the stuff, and then we spend the other whatever left to give it away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I would say living simply for me is at the core of my existence. Mahatma Gandhi is one of my biggest influences. And of course, we know him for saying live simply so that others may simply live. And that's absolutely at the core of my being, is how do we meet our basic needs, our needs for connection, belonging, love, acceptance, community, and do them through living more simply, not through this ownership and this accumulation of more and more material possessions, but instead through building relationships with our community, with all the life we share this home with, and also with ourselves, like really getting to know ourselves and love ourselves. And as Mr. Rogers says, I like you just the way you are. And the only way we can do that is if we like ourselves just the way we are.
Yeah. So and so your philosophy in life, you wish to see liberation and basic human rights for all. And I love that because I feel the same way. I feel like, you know, we're all God's children living here on borrowed time. We're on a vacation, I must say, on planet Earth. And it depends on where your parents met and where you were born. That's how you're going to live. That's your culture, right? But why do you think more people in our planet don't gravitate towards people like yourself and others who wants to see peace, who wants to see a more stable world, who wants to see, you know, everyone thrive?
Well, I think that the way things are today, it is very hard. I have such compassion for everybody, you know, even those that live very privileged, affluent lives. I have a lot of compassion for them because our society is really set up in a way that makes it very hard to live in a harmonious way. And I have, of course, even more compassionate for the billions of people around the world who live in poverty, largely because of the exploitation by Western cultures like the United States. But it's very challenging. The times we live in, the societies are set up around mostly overconsumption, consumerism, and destruction. So it takes some real willpower, and it takes some real, self-surety in order to take the many of the steps to live a much more sustainable life. And it also takes time. You know, we do live in a time when a lot of people are very poor in time because working multiple jobs and et cetera. But that said, there are millions of people. The reason that I'm so invigorated and I'm still doing what I'm doing after 15 years is because there's literally millions of people who have woken up to realize that the American dream is the world's nightmare, and who have made changes and are continuing to make changes, growing their own food, foraging, living more simply, working with the community, riding their bicycles and walking, removing the toxic chemicals from their lives and their houses. And there's just so many people who are doing so much. And I'm grateful to be, you know, part of this movement of people doing that.
Right. So for listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we're speaking with Robin Greenfield, who's an activist, a social reformer, and a servant of planet Earth, humanity, plants, animals, and he wants to share this planet with them in harmony and peace. So, you know, you were featured on Fox News, and I watched that clip. My goodness, talk about your food and medicine that you were able to live off for a year. Talk to our listeners a little bit about that. You saved it up, or how did you accumulate all of that and for 1 year? And this way, I guess you didn't have to buy anything for a year?
Yeah, well, so in 2019, I was living in Orlando, Florida, and I embarked on adventure and breaking free from the grocery stores, breaking free from the restaurants, from the whole global industrial food system. And I set out to grow and forage 100% of my food and medicine for an entire year. And I did just that. And right now, 7 years later or so, I'm immersed in a new adventure, and that's to forage 100% of my food. So this time, no gardens. The earth is my garden. And I'm eating abundance of foods and medicines that the earth is providing. I'm 180 days in, and we got connected because I was down in Florida for a couple of months as part of this speaking tour, and I've just arrived back in Wisconsin. So this entire year I'm traveling the country, leading plant walks, giving talks, and just helping people to see, wow, there's literally food and medicine growing right outside my door in my front yard, and just connecting people with that.
Well, you've got a lot of fans in the studio today. Danny is shaking his head vigorously here because he likes the fish. So maybe he wants to live off the fish one of these days. And also, so talk to us about the 1 million community fruit tree initiative, because, you know, my husband and my good friend Sharon is in the studio today. She knows my husband utilizes our yard, and he says he's not going to plant any trees that don't produce a fruit or vegetable. And I fight with him because I want to see, you know, the hibiscus and the roses, and I want a little flowers here and there. And then he says, it's interesting that if you have good soil, you should eat off the land. And he literally gave up living on the water, the river, for land. So what is it about you guys that this is what you all think about? And I think it's spreading, because now I'm beginning to say, oh, yeah, I could go and eat, you know, I could get lemons and make lemonades, and I could eat mulberries from the tree and just pick them. And it is a really good feeling when you could pick your own fruit and vegetables.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, there's a huge movement of people that are turning their yards into gardens. And I'm very passionate about that, because the thing is, there are many really beautiful edible flowers. So nasturtium and the hibiscuses, for example, are beautiful as well as edible. So we can grow really, truly beautiful gardens that are providing an ecosystem service. They're creating space for other species to live in, that help to sequester carbon, to build soil, and just build joy and beauty in our lives. And this is a wonderful thing to do all over the country. But in Florida, there's a huge movement of permaculturists. There's the Florida Permaculture Convergence. There's the Florida Earth Skills Gatherings. There's the Florida School of Holistic Living. And so there's a lot of people there that are really passionate about turning their yards into gardens and safe havens for the other plants and animals at the same time.
Yeah, and for the bees, we had a guy on last week who spoke about the importance of bees and production of honey and all that. So you believe in living in reciprocity, the balance between giving and taking. And, you know, as I was preparing for the show, I thought about myself being a young child, being raised in the islands in Trinidad and Tobago. And we were planting our own food. We were using lemons. We slept on mattresses made out of coconut fiber. We ate the coconut jelly and drank the water. We made brooms from the coconut tree. We made coconut oil. We lived a life of a village life, right? But then as we grew up, everyone started seeing, you know, the fluorescent light bulbs. We saw TV shows like Starsky and Hutch and Frank Cannon, and we saw things in the grocery store and package. And I remember saying to my father, when I grow up, I'm going to go to the United States where I could go into a grocery store and purchase some of those items that are so nicely wrapped. And as you get older, you're like, wait a minute, maybe I had it made in the village with barrels of water and springs and a garden. And, you know, and it's like, what have we done to our earth and Mother Nature that people prefers to go in the air-conditioned supermarkets? Are we not educating the young ones properly or ourselves? Because now I look at the contrast and I'm like, oh, well, maybe I had it made in Earth's paradise and I didn't know it.
Yes, there's one of the big things is there's a huge social stigma around the belief that the more consumerist life is the more advanced or civilized life, and that the life that's simple and closely connected to the earth is a life of, you know, poverty and a life of not having. But the reality is that today that we've seen that people are actually much happier generally who have less and who are living closer to the earth than people who are living these really affluent lives. And you see that from a lot of countries where as they supposedly develop, that the human beings are actually losing the meaning and the purpose that they had through having a much more closely connected life with the earth. And obviously I have a lot of privilege being born in the United States and such. So I feel somewhat, you know, it's a little hard for me to talk about exactly, but I've met so many people from around the world, from Kenya, for example, who have grown up in the rural countryside, living the simple life, and they pursue the consumerist life with the job and the big house. And then they realize, oh, I don't want this. I want to go back to what I had before.
Yeah.
I so enjoy, I do container gardening on my patio. because I live in a townhouse, and I love the fact that I can just go out to my area, you know, right out in my courtyard and get my salad for the night. And I also joined this group called Dirty Fingernails Meetup. So I'm meeting other people that are doing sort of the same thing and growing new things and really teaching me about native plants in Florida as well, which are great for the butterflies and the bees and all of the other ecosystems that kind of help in, you know, in it's in urban America, you know. We got a lot of parking lots where I live.
But Robin, there has to be like a healthy balance, right? There has to be a balance because the lifestyle that you're talking about, it's not about giving up things. It's about filling a heart with something more meaningful and giving back to the planet a more meaningful life. So how do we strike that balance where you could still have, you know, some nice dresses and go out to eat and attend fundraisers to help children, and but at the same time, you could be helping Mother Earth as well?
Yes, it's all about balance. So, you know, people who know my work see that I go to an extreme for sure. But the message isn't to go to the extreme. The message is to ask questions. Am I living the life that I truly want to? Are my actions in alignment with my beliefs? And if we kind of come to, oh, no, you know, my actions aren't in alignment and I'm not living the life that I truly want, then it's about what do we want to do to create change? And so some things that we can do, we can grow more food. We can forage some of our food. We can start to compost. We can reduce the amount of trash that we create by using more reusable items. We can shop at the farmers market, supporting local farmers. We can build skills to be able to, for example, make some of our own clothes or fix our own clothes. We can get much more involved in our community. We can share a lot more. We can break free from the monetary system by, you know, just thinking about the ways we're spending
money. And you know what? I find, Robin, that also when you start thinking about the food, how it gets from the grocery store to your refrigerator to your tabletop, if you're a deep thinker and you really want to be pensive about it, then you think about who's picking that fruit, who's picking that vegetable. Are they in the hot sun? Do they have water? Do they have shelter? Do they have health insurance? Are they immigrants? Are they here legally? And you find that we are connected not just in being a minimalist or watching what we eat and giving back to the planet, but then you start caring about people. Then you actually start caring. Like my husband always says, if you're running errands, so combine the errands so you're not wasting gas to go to Walmart and come back, and then you go to Walgreens and come back, and then you go to the gym, then you go to Publix. So little things that make a difference. So talk to us a little bit about how watching out for Mother Earth and looking out for food and what we grow, how did that impact the people who put the food on our table?
Yes, absolutely. When you really look into our global industrial food system, you see it's a system of exploitation and oppression. To put those strawberries on our table, you know, the people that are traveling from Mexico, they often have 2 to 4 times higher rates of cancer and respiratory disease because they're the ones spraying the pesticides on there. And, you know, underpaid workers working in really poor conditions. And that's the big motivation for me and so many others to say, you know what, I'm not going to support that system. Instead, I'm going to grow my own food or forage, or I'm going to support local farmers. And of course, there's also putting pressure on the big chains and telling them that we want things differently. But for me, it's really about just taking the change in our own hands through doing things on a much more communal level rather than tapping into these big, broken, monocrop, industrial food system.
Yeah, because whenever there's a consumer convenience, someone else is paying for that, be it the earth, other people, other plants, other animals, or, you know, labor at what cost? So,
yes.
And you make us think. I mean, I love doing shows like this because it impacts my life as well. We've had so many people that came on our show to talk about sustainability, and a simple thing is turning the water off when you're using the shower or putting a bucket in the shower when you're taking, you know, so the water goes in there instead of down the drain pipe. So talk to us a little bit about consumer convenience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're speaking my language. The thing about consumer convenience, well, the way I started to realize it is you've heard this saying, energy is not created nor destroyed. You know, this is Einstein. And I realized it's the same with consumer convenience. Whenever we create that convenience, it means that we are taking energy from somewhere else. What that means is we're outsourcing the burden on other people. So most of the things that we're buying at the store, the food that we're eating, all of this, you know, cheap plastic and consumer convenience, there's always a price that's being paid for the cheapness, and we just don't see it. And these systems are designed around making sure we don't see it, because if we see it, we're not going to want to do it anymore. And that's where tying into the local system and building skills and connecting with our community is such a powerful way to break free from that.
Yes.
And I just have one really great plug for your website, robingreenfield.org. If you go to the navigation at the top, there's a button called Start Here Guide. And you have such amazing links and amazing resources for people that anybody that wants to start or even make little changes, as I've kind of flipped through some of the different links that you have, it's such an easy guide, you know, to basically simply stop buying plastic bottles, right? And just use a cup instead. Those kinds of things. And
well, it's
from
common
a waste,
sense.
Common from sense a waste sense. To what to read, to what movies to watch, which podcasts to hear. Mm. So great. Yeah. So great.
And you know, Robin, when we were growing up, my dad used to say, you are what you eat. And of course, you know, we grew up Hindus. Once in a while, we'll get a little piece of chicken. And poor me, I always got the chicken neck or the back. Never a nice fleshy piece, you know. Gosh, I said one day, when I grow up, I'm going to eat a whole chicken. I haven't eaten it yet. but my dad would say, you know, if you eat the animal, then your thoughts are different. If you eat plants and more vegetables, then we saw that people were a little bit more peaceful. And eating and living the way you are talking about, it doesn't mean that we're telling people that you want them to be poor. We're not stimulating poverty. We're just showing people a different way to live and to be more in harmony with planet Earth.
Yes, absolutely. It's all about... You know, for me, there's not a good way or a bad way or a right or a wrong way. It's just about tapping into our own value system and asking ourselves those questions. And so my encouragement for anybody that's inspired and excited is start with one positive change at a time. One step at a time, we can break free from what no longer serves, and we can live the lives that we truly want. And on my website at robingreenfield.org/100, I list the first 100 changes that I made when I woke up and realized that the life I was living wasn't in alignment. And I encourage people to just start with one positive change at a time. Start with the ones you're most excited about, enthusiastic about, not the ones that you're feeling daunted about. And one step at a time, build the foundation of a more simple and sustainable life.
So, Robin, if Mother Earth could talk, what do you think Mother Earth would say to us right now? Because I feel sorry for Mother Earth with all that's going on. I feel her pain, and I feel like it's our responsibility to leave the planet a better place than we found
it. She's raising a bunch of nasty teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like in Hinduism, the goddess Sita, she spoke to the earth, and all legend has it that Mother Earth opened and she was in it. Of course, that's, you know, a folklore, right? And my name is very holy, and it also means that you're keeper of the earth. But what do you think Mother Earth would say right now if she could talk?
I think even with all of the damage and all the destruction, I think Mother Earth would say, I love you because you're my children. You're the children of Mother Earth, and I truly do love you no matter what.
That's so beautiful. Now, Sharon and I went to Amsterdam with another friend a couple of years ago to see the tulips. And God's planet is really beautiful. Where is your special place on God's planet?
Well, you know, I would say one thing that I have really come to is that I really see that everywhere on this earth is beautiful, even in the places that are considered the armpit of America. Everywhere has its own beauty when we can look into it. So I really do love everywhere. Currently, I live in northern Wisconsin in my hometown, and that's a place I feel a really deep, strong connection with, the cold, clean waters of Lake Superior, where I call home, are one of the places that I have a deep connection to.
And would you recommend any earth-friendly dishes for our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends? I know everybody thinks a salad is an easy dish, but do you have one in mind, like an earth-friendly dish that you like, something that you eat?
So many things, but what I would say that I really like is just eating whole foods. So not foods that are packaged and processed and have all these ingredients, but any whole foods. And a great way to do that is by going to the food co-ops or stores that have a bulk food section. You can bring your own containers and you can get your grains, your nuts, your seeds, your herbs, your spices, your oils, all without creating trash. And that's really what I love to recommend, is a diet based around whole foods.
Wow. You know what? A lot of people might say what you're doing is impossible, but I think once we read what you've done and watch some of your videos, it's a little bit challenging. Like, I wondered about your outdoor plumbing when you were out in the wild, and I'm like, oh, well, he figured it out. You've learned how to do it. So if you had a 30-second in an elevator with someone and you wanted to tell them a little bit about sustainability and what you're doing to save our planet, what would you tell them to let them see that they could go home and do a quick little research and maybe try to do one thing for the planet?
Yeah, exactly. Just as I was saying before, one thing at a time. Find what sparks the interest and the excitement in you. Maybe it's composting, growing food, foraging, volunteering in your community, whatever it is that sparks the excitement in you, start with that and go one positive change at a time. Continue to become the change you wish to see in the world with each action.
So we shouldn't have to be lonely doing this. From what you're saying, Robin Greenfield, is there a lot of activists out there and people who want to see social reforms and contribute to equality and justice here in our world.
What was that again?
I said, so what you're saying is we don't have to be lonely, that there are a lot of social reformers out there who wants to see more equality and justice in our world, not just for humans, but for our earth.
Yes, absolutely. We can do this together. There's no need for this to be a lonely journey.
Well, we are going to make sure we put everything on our website and all of our social media. I'm especially, I've been looking through the 100 changes already, and I realize how easy some of these things are to do. So I hope that all of our listeners get to robingreenfield.org and try a few of those things. Even one little change can make a difference. We are going to take a quick moment to listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
BABA Senior Care Outreach. They are a private, non-for-profit organization committed to serving the aging community with compassion and respect. They recognize and honor seniors as individuals, and they are dedicated to promoting their health, safety, dignity, and overall quality of life. Please join them on May 23rd at the Wickham Park in Melbourne, Florida, for a BSO Senior Walk-In Show. Well, they will have vendors, great resources, and information to provide for seniors. So please check out babaseniouroutreach.org for more information.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere, like even Alaska.
Everywhere. Everywhere.
Even Indonesia.
1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we archive all the shows there as well under the on-demand button. Any Monday you can pick. And then, of course, we share that all of our, on our social media sites as well as our website, cwmediainc.com, so that you can search by name or by topic.
Right, what a wonderful first segment. Just makes you believe that anything is possible if we put our mind to it. And really and surely, we have to be the change we wish to see. Mm-hmm. That's why I told Sharon here that I'm not buying a new dress for the wedding. I'm going to wear what I have because I'm thinking about the planet.
Wow.
That's it. That's I'm done. That's
You're
it.
Not thinking about Macy's?
No.
Okay.
Taking
right.
a break.
Just making sure.
So our second segment for our listeners who are tuning in to see Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, my good friend Sharon is here, and she brought her friend from the woman entitled Heather Arado. And we talked a little bit earlier about what they do, but I'm going to start the show off with Heather. Heather is the... On her bio, she is the co-chair of the East Central Florida Woman Entitled chapter, and she was recently appointed to the Woman Entitled board, where she's passionate about mentorship, education, and advancing women in the industry, as well as she does stuff with mortgages and all that. So go ahead, tell us a little bit, Heather, about yourself, and how did you get involved with Woman Entitled?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure meeting you and being here.
Thank you.
So I have been in the industry. I started out in mortgage in 2003. And then I got, as we say, tricked into title. I moved into title in 2013. Nobody ever grows up and says, I want to be a title agent when I grow up. So you're either born into it or you're tricked into it. I fell into the second category. I was tricked into it. But I love it. I'm very passionate about it. I am very nerdy. I love data and reading and trying to figure things out. So that's how title became a good fit for me. As far as women in title, I found them on LinkedIn and Instagram. They have a very strong social media presence, and I started seeing all of the amazing things that they were doing. So they're very big into education and advocacy, creating a tribe for women in the industry. So for those who aren't familiar, Tidal is very heavy in women population that work in the industry. However, there's a disparity between the women that are in the industry and that those of us who end up in leadership positions. So Women in Tidal really came to be to try to bridge that gap, to see how they could help and make sure that we were all collaborating instead of competing against each other. And that really spoke to me because it is a dog-eat-dog industry, mortgage and title, real estate in general.
Oh, yeah, yes. And there's so many here in Brevard.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. And so Sharon is Sharon David Ho is the Director of Operations for Title Services at Source Point. You also are empowering not just the people you work with, but myself also. I've watched you go back to school and get your master's, and motivates so many of us to do more with our lives. So how did you get involved with Women in Title?
Well, Sita, just one point. It's Sharon How David, but I don't use the how. So it's just Sharon David.
Well, I don't know why it's on your bio.
Is it?
And your picture is so pretty.
I did it backwards. Yeah. Okay. I got involved because Heather reached out to me. She said, I'm trying to start a chapter. Do you want to have coffee? I'm like, sure. So I went, and it sounded like a really good thing to do because, like Heather said, there is a disparity between how many women actually work in the title industry and how many actually make the leadership roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it just sounds like a good opportunity to help others.
So Heather, that's great that you reached out to her. Did you reach out to other people, too, to join your group?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Because I know we've bought and sold a lot of properties here in Brevard, and they're always so pleasant. Yes. And what a good feeling it is when you meet someone who explains to you what exactly is a title search.
Right.
Because you don't want to be surprised when you purchase your home and somebody else shows up and said, hey, this is my house.
Yes.
So talk to our listeners a little bit about what title companies do. And how do they work?
Sure. So just as you started out, we do start with a search. So we search all county records. We also search for judicial records and make sure that there's no liens that could potentially intervene and come up on the property that were the past owner's problem, but the future owner becomes their problem if they're not satisfied when you take over the property. So it's super important for title insurance. I recommend if you're buying any property, you always get title insurance. It's a one-time fee, and this is going to sound like a selling point, but it's really not. But it's a one-time fee, but it covers you the entire time you own the property.
Right.
So it's not like a monthly premium that we see with other insurances. It's one time, it covers you forever that you own it. And it doesn't matter if an owner from 50 years ago, a lien pops up, title insurance will cover it. If there was any fraud or forgery that came up prior, you know, in your transaction, title insurance will take care of it.
Yeah. So because it's a lot of people, if they're buying something cash, they can forego the title insurance, right?
Correct.
And that's not a good idea.
No, it's really not.
So
it's
talk
really
to
not.
Those people who have a lot of cash and they think, they know it all, and they're not going to get the title insurance, but they should.
Yeah, you still really should. I mean, in my career, and I'm sure Sharon can speak to it too, I've seen liens pop up for over $1 million that just were not caught for whatever reason. Maybe they were recorded improperly or they were indexed wrong, but they came up. And if you don't have title insurance, that is your problem. You are going to lose your home.
Right.
If you can't satisfy that debt, that lien, you're going to lose your home.
Right. And Sharon David, she's my buddy. And yes, yeah,
we
now
love
I'm
Sharon.
Saying it, Sharon. I don't know why she put that middle name to throw me off. It's all right. CDF Friends is an unscripted show. That's why people love us. That's what we've been on
That's
for
right.
15 and a half years. So title searches can reveal problems, lots of problems, such as forgotten wills, defective deeds, previously unknown mineral land rights, I heard as well. Also errors in public records and so many things. Talk to our listeners a little bit about some of those things that show up when people do a title search.
Well, you don't run into that a lot, thankfully, but that insurance is what helps you if it does come up, because even though it doesn't come up in every title search, if it did come up, like Heather said, and you've got a judgment, let's say, for $1 million, that's on you.
Right.
Because that has first priority over your lien, over, you know, your title. But different things can come up. There's, and Heather, help me, it's been a while.
Usually that's when you find out that you're not married or that you are married.
Yeah.
You're still married.
Oh,
you know, but then all of a sudden there's this extra person right. that you're like, hey, where'd you come from?
But the title insurance protects the buyer and the seller, which is really good, right? But Sharon, you know, go ahead.
No, sorry. From up until you take title.
Right.
So anything that happened in the past, anything that comes after that that you mess up, that's on you.
It's such an interesting topic because a lot of people don't talk about this. And another thing people don't talk about, Sharon, is the joint tenants and the other one, tenants
in common.
You know, I swear my Alexa said to ask that, and I'm going to ask it. So talk to us a little bit about that.
So a lot of people don't know about tenants in common, I think especially in Florida, because a lot of people buying houses most of the time are married. So they just take it as husband and wife or joint tenants with rights or survivorship. But if you're in a second marriage, and I'm not an attorney, so I'm not giving legal advice.
Yes.
If you're in a second marriage, and let's say you both have kids, and if you have it with joint tenants, whoever the survivor is going to get everything. And that means if they're not a nice person, your kids get nothing. So what, you know, a lot of people don't know is tenants in common, if you take it in that title, so Joe Smith and Mary Smith as tenants in common, when one person passes away, their 50% ownership goes to their kids.
Right. So listen up, ladies and gents. Know who you're buying these houses with and how it's worded.
And it's important for people to know, does title take precedence or does a will take precedence? Right? And those kinds of things. So, like, you have to get those. And nobody's an attorney. Right. But nobody's an attorney. But those are the kinds of things that title insurance helps with.
Right.
And these types of questions come up, or these problems.
Right. And here, so let's go to another question now, because this is important. Somebody at the gym asked me to have Heather and Sharon expanded it. What exactly is escrow for when someone is purchasing a home? A lay person, you know, actually the lady who was helping me with the house this morning, she was asking about that. And I said, what a great question. So talk to us about that.
That is a great question. So a lot of people don't understand escrow either. Escrow is the fiduciary side of a transaction. So escrow is where all the funds are held and where they are held and make sure that nothing happens to them. They're safe. They're safeguarded. And then when the transaction is complete, papers are signed, everything goes out of escrow based on the instructions. So, you know, Mary gets paid, Joe gets paid, the title company gets paid, the appraiser gets paid. Everybody gets paid out of escrow. And then the other side of escrow is if you have a mortgage, let's say, and then your mortgage company sets up an escrow account for you. That's totally separate and aside from when you're buying a property, where the escrow that I just explained. So then in escrow, when you have a mortgage, that's where they hold the funds that they take out of your monthly payment every month to pay for your homeowner's insurance, pay for your property taxes, things like that. So that's the other side of escrow. So there's two separate sides.
Yeah. And you know, when people purchase in a home, they want to know, well, how do I know which title company to choose,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have to have somebody who has a lot of experience,
yes.
right? So talk to us a little bit about, because there's so many in Brevard.
There
when
are.
You do the search, a lot comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you or Sharon could take that question. How do you know which one to choose?
I'm going to let Heather answer
yeah.
that.
Okay.
So a lot of people that I talk to, you know, it's all about who you know. And especially when you're buying locally, if you're in the area, most people opt to go for someone that maybe is recommended to them, word of mouth. If you don't have the luxury of that, what I always recommend is do your due diligence. Like you said, do your homework. How long have they been in business? I certainly, you know, no shade to a title company that maybe just popped up a week ago, but I might not choose to close with them. I'd rather have somebody that I've seen consistency with, and they, you know, that you know you can depend on them, and they have that experience.
Yeah, and I've heard people talk about an abstract of title.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you guys when you close on properties, you have to prepare that as well as closing statements, right? Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about that, because people, when they get so intimidated when you go to a closing and they give you, and my husband is one, doesn't read anything. We just trust the people, right? Trust is important,
it is.
Right?
It is.
But talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. So the abstract of title is actually the search. So that is everything that came up in the search with the parcel ID and with the owner's names. Make sure that we put everything together. We're basically painting a picture of the property and making sure that any encumbrances are addressed. If the property has any encroachments that are there that need to be addressed, that's the abstract. And then the exam that is done, that is used to prepare your title commitment. So your title commitment is what has all of your requirements and your exceptions. Your requirements are everything that has to be satisfied prior to the closing. So by the time you get to the closing table, your title agent has taken care of all of that. So when you get to the title, you get to the closing table, you're sitting there with everything, like your closing disclosures. They should be explaining all the fees to you, making sure that you understand what you're actually signing to and agreeing to. But what you can be comfortable with, as long as you've chosen a reputable title agency to take care of your transaction, you shouldn't have to worry about anything that has been done up to that point. And as long as you're purchasing the title policy, that's what you'll get at the table. And keep that. Don't throw that away. Once you have satisfied that and you have that in your hands, anything that took place up until the time you signed, if something comes up in the future, you're covered.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yes.
And Sharon, I'm sure you've spoken to a lot of people about the importance of a good credit score, right? You want to talk a little bit about, because when people want to buy a house, they say, oh, I'm paying $1,800 a month rent or whatever, and I want to buy a house. But then the credit score, it's poor. How do you tell people from an early age about their credit score and how important it is as when they get older?
Well, it is important, but it comes into play not so much with title as it does with your mortgage. So there are different laws, and I know some of them because I just got my NMLS licensing. NMLS, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So my mortgage loan originator licensing. So the credit score will determine. First of all, there's a law that no one can tell you, oh, your score is too low.
That's good to know. I never knew that.
They can't tell you that. They have to say, give me your information. Show me what your bills are. And, you know, we'll pull a credit report and we'll see what the underwriter says. So you can never, if you go to someone who says, oh, no, your credit's no good, I can't do it, they're breaking a law. So your credit score is going to determine for you your interest rates for that
mortgage.
How
much loan you could get.
How much loan you can get.
Because you may see a beautiful house you want to get, but you can't get it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
Could increase your down payment liability. Yeah, it impacts a lot.
Yeah. Yes. And so let's get some education about the title searches and all this, right? So when you provide this service, you do a title search, insurance, document preparation, closing and escrow services, and additional support. What does one need to become a title agent? How much schooling do you have to have? I mean, it sounds like it's a lot. It's math, and I'm not good at math. So how do you become a title agent? I'm thinking in all 50 states, you're needed because buying and selling is taking place all the time. That's the economic engine, real estate.
It is. And it's regardless of what interest rates do, people still have to buy homes.
That's right.
So the way to get into title, if you're not tricked into it and you're not if you're not tricked or born into it, what I would suggest is find a mentor, find somebody who is already in the industry and maybe connect with them and speak to them to see if it's something that you're interested in. A lot of title companies will hire what we call, you know, freshers. So we'll hire folks and put them in certain positions, even if they don't have title experience. And that is a great place to start because then you get your feet wet. You start to understand the documentation and then you can just move up from there. As far as getting your licensing, there is a course that's required. And it in Florida, it's offered, I think, Sharon, like twice a year.
Yeah,
it's in near Tampa. Mm-hmm. You go for 2 weekends and you take this class, and then you have to take a state exam that's proctored to get your license.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way, I think. But yeah, we need more people that are not born and tricked into titles.
That's right.
So,
if you want to become a national, yes. Once you get your state license, most of them are reciprocal. So there are a few you have to take another exam. Mm-hmm. So Virginia, mm-hmm. Maryland, Pennsylvania, I think that's might be it. Maybe California, and you're not really licensed. You can't be. Some states you have to have a building. So Texas, right. Yeah. They call Utah. It brick and mortar. You can't be a title agent in Texas unless you work in Texas.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, one of the intimidating things about purchasing a home too is people don't know what to bring to the closing, right? Mm-hmm. And I would think it varies from state to state. What are some of the common documents that a person who is listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today is saying, I want to buy a home, but you have to have trust, mm-hmm. you have to have respect, and you have to have know someone with a lot of experience. What do they bring to the closing?
So definitely unexpired ID.
Yes.
Yeah, Sharon.
You hear that, folks?
Yes.
Got to get your driver's license updated.
Yes.
Passport.
Yes. So any documentation that you're using to verify your identity must be current and unexpired and must be you. If you're purchasing, you know, you might have some cash to close. And it depends on how you need to bring that. Sometimes it's a check or a cashier's check, or sometimes you can send a wire. But that's pretty much it. I mean,
yeah.
As long as you have your ID on you and you're satisfying your cash to close, just come in with a smile on your face, because the hard part's over. You've gone through all the rigmarole and you're ready to take ownership.
Yeah, because, you know, you get your credit score, you get mm-hmm. a job, you make your down payment, you find out which mortgage company you're using or lender. And then, of course, a very important question, when is the timeline for closing? Because some people say it's 3 months, a month. What determines the timeline for the closing?
So it really varies and it depends. I would say probably midpoint would maybe be around 45 days. You know,
depends on what you find in your title search, exactly. How long it takes to clear it up, mm-hmm. how fast the lender is.
Yeah, because we have to coordinate with each other. So the title company has to coordinate with the lender. And it really just depends, because sometimes you have a clean search and you might be able to close in less than a month.
Yeah.
And sometimes there might be some outstanding things that take a
little bit
longer.
Yeah, if it's an easy property, no sisters and brothers fighting. And
yes.
Aunts and uncles coming out of the yin yang.
Yes.
Pa left it for me. Like in Trinidad, I swear, anytime there's a murder sometime, look for the word land. Yeah, I say, oh my God, something. But anyway, so Heather, then would you say that understanding the details of your title insurance policy will give you a peace of mind, knowing that you're well protected from significant financial loss?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's very important. So
yes.
Now you and Sharon met, and you've got the title. You guys meet once a month. If there's a title agent out there that don't, I mean, it's a pretty grueling job to do all these searches.
It is.
And you want to get more people to join.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you reach out with them? Is it word of mouth, through a website? Do you have a monthly meeting? Mm-hmm. How do you all meet so you could empower and enrich each other's lives? And you guys are beautiful, both of you. Thank you so much for using your voice and your brilliance to help us understand more about buying, selling real estate and titling it safely.
Of course. Well, thank you. So yes, we are always looking for more women in title to join our local chapter. Also, it's open to anyone who touches title. We have brokers and lenders who actually come. We have real estate agents who come and join our meetings too. Anybody that ever touches title is more than welcome. We do meet every second Tuesday of every month. The location varies, but we do advertise that on LinkedIn and Instagram. We also have a website, womenentitled.net. And it's a free community that anyone can join and see all of our future events that are coming up. But yeah, we love to collaborate. We're not about competition. No one is trying to poach employees or anything like that. We're not trying to sell anything. We're just trying to get together in a safe space where we can build the tribe and talk through some of the daily issues that we have and maybe help each other through how to deal with them in the future.
Well, Sharon, and I think a lot of people appreciate like a one-stop shopping where they can get their mortgage, close with that company, and do everything with that person because it comes down to trust.
Yeah.
You know, right?
Again, what a great education we had here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Once again, we will share all of this great information about Women in Title and how you can contact them and get involved right on our website, SitaMediaInc.com. And we will be back next Monday for another great show of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thanks for tuning in.